away from a confrontation because I didn't want to scream. I didn't want to be a screamer. I don't think there's anything wrong with backing down sometimes from the confrontation, even though I could have run somebody over. Am I winning if I run a guy over? Can I go home and go, yeah, I won that confrontation. I ran the guy over. I'm the winner. I'm in jail, but I'm a winner. He was standing in a parking spot right on Queen Street East in Toronto. And I'm like, I don't think you can hold a parking spot for somebody. And he's like, oh, yeah, just watch me. And I was like, oh, yeah, watch me slowly plow over you. And the guy was yelling. But it was in my neighborhood. And everybody knows I'm beloved in my neighborhood. I'm like the king of Kensington in Leslieville, Toronto. Good story. Not so much. My mom didn't enjoy it when I told my mom my story. I'm Jim Richards.
It's News Talk Tonight on the iHeartRadio Talk Network. Jim Richards.
Okay, my mom's allergic to shellfish, and she was getting this pasta. We were out for, they just got back from Florida. She's getting this pasta that had, the pasta was shell shape. Now, not like little, like 2 centimeter ones. They were like 2 inches long, big. And my mom, I said, Mom, you're allergic to shells. And she said, oh, yeah, but this is pasta. And I said, yeah, I know. I thought it was just being fun, Mom. And she says, is that what the liberals are telling you to say? I was like, where the hell did that come from? My mom is very conservative. Every time I would ask her while she was at her home up north in Toronto, I was like, what are you up to now? What are you checking out on the internet, Mom? Who knows? It might have been pornography. I don't know. And my 80-year-old mom would respond to me, Breitbart. And I was like, okay, good to know. All right, the Ukraine counteroffensive appears to have started. What do we need to know about that? Richard Shimuka is a military expert, senior fellow at the McDonald Laurier Institute, and he joins us right now. Richard, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so we've been hearing about this counteroffensive for about 2 weeks now. Is that counterproductive when you're Russia and you might know what's coming, or do you know what's coming?
Oh, Russia's known this is coming perhaps since the fall, when the West basically trained and equipped 3 corps worth of Ukrainian troops with basically some of their best weaponry possible. It's pretty evident they're going to use it at some point in time. One of the big sort of indicators was when you had those Discord leaks earlier this year. One of them was basically some of the battle plans, or potential battle plans, I should say, for the Ukrainian offensive, which pretty well indicated this was happening. So we know this is coming. A lot of people suggested it probably would have happened earlier when the muddy season kind of tamped down and it gets drier and more mobile. But it's starting to get pretty warm in the region, and we're sort of starting to see perhaps the beginnings of it, or at least the sort of the initial phase of these kind of operations.
Yeah. What is your confidence in the fact that they have been able to retool and versus a Russian army that I think most people would think would be one of the most superior armies in the world, but doesn't appear to be so?
Oh, so, I mean, the Russian army is racked. Like, it is seen constant combat operations. Basically, the top tier of its capabilities have been destroyed or degraded to the point of non-existence. If you look at some of the sort of unit histories of some of the units, like some of the tank armies or whatever, these units have been attrited to the point where the pre-war capability they have is gone. Like, and so what you're looking at is maybe there's some combat veterans, maybe some older equipment, and then you've got a large amount of filler of conscripts or other troops that have been kind of brought in to fill out these units. And so the combat capability that they came into this struggle back in 2021 is gone. And they're basically only able to do very limited sort of defensive operations to a large extent. The Ukrainian forces, there's two forces. There's their pre-war forces that have been fighting this whole time. These are the ones that you've been seeing sort of defending around Bakhmut or around sort of, you know, the areas in the south. And then there's these 3 corps that the West has really sort of put a lot of money, energy, training. Many of these troops were taken from Ukraine, trained in places like Sweden or in Germany or in the United Kingdom. or in Latvia, and sort of built out to be a much more effective modern force along the lines of, let's say, some of the NATO countries' concepts and operations and given their equipment. And those are the ones that are basically going to be used as the spearhead for this major offensive.
So this major offensive, is it easy to say what we would expect from something like this, given this whole war doesn't seem to be that predictable?
No, and it is tough to say. There's two kind of signposts or sort of examples that people kind of point to. And these are the two offensives that happened last year that the Ukrainians undertook. The first one was around Kherson, where you saw this sort of rapid collapse of the Russian, the Kharkiv, the one that was in north, where you saw a rapid collapse, and the Ukrainians took a very large portion of their territory back. And that was very fast because they were able to break through. The other one is the Kherson offensive, which took months to sort of slowly reduce the Russian forces and sort of break down their defenses and then finally push them out of this area. And people kind of think, well, which one is it going to be like? And it's more likely to be the latter, because you see the Russians, even though their forces are in poor state, what they've been doing for the past 6 months is basically dig into some of these areas, especially in the south, which the Ukrainians really want to sort of take back. This is like Mykolaiv or even Crimea. They're heavily fortified in these areas. So it's going to take a lot of effort, likely, to sort of break down their sort of defenses and sort of push through them. And that could be costly for the Ukrainians. The forces that they've gotten are extremely capable, but they're also kind of brittle because they're using smaller numbers of units with much more firepower to sort of create sort of gaps or create breakthroughs in their lines. And it may not be that easy, especially if Russia just throws manpower at problems. And, you know, they're willing to sustain the losses. But if the more and more manpower they send, the more losses the Ukrainians are going to take as well. So it's going to be a difficult story. We don't know exactly which of those two examples it may well be. But, you know, given the amount of fortifications that the Russians have been building, it may well be the latter.
When do you think that this might end? I heard somebody earlier today, I think it was on Vashi's show, suggest that perhaps the way this ends is that Ukraine cedes territory to Russia that they've taken, and they try to figure out a truce and move forward at some point. Do you see it ending that way?
It's possible. I mean, you look at all these other conflicts around Russia's periphery, like in Georgia, or even though they're not directly involved, you see Armenia and Azerbaijan, you have these, they're colloquially known as frozen conflicts, right? Where there isn't an actual resolution, but there's sort of like an armistice or a simmering sort of struggle between the two countries, right? And that's possible that you could see this here, where both sides kind of exhaust each other to a point where it's like, well, we can't really continue doing this, but we don't want to give up what we've got. So we'll make a kind of an uneasy truce, and this may flare up again. Yeah. This is part of the reason why the Ukrainians just don't want us to cede territory, because they see that this has happened for, you know, in Georgia as well, that the Russians will use this to their leverage further on. And they don't see that any sort of peace deal they make will just basically forestall a further sort of conflict in the future.
When you try to analyze what's going on, and I'm sorry, I only had a minute here, how do you verify what's true from both sides?
It's tough. I have some priors because, I mean, I've studied this for quite some time, so I guess I have a little bit of a discriminator. I also think that it's easy. I try to avoid the really quick sort of judgments. Like if what you see on Twitter, what you see in the news today, in a couple of these times, it becomes much, much more apparent what may well be accurate. So I think, and when there are more sources available. So if you have something that was one or two sources, yeah, you can't really be sure about it. But when you see like multiple sources, let's say the U.S. government, allied governments, Ukrainian government, even the Russian and some of the Russian sources, put that all together, that's when you get that picture sort of much more comes in focus. And right now, seeing that there's an offensive going on, yeah, there's some initial indications, but it may take a couple of days or weeks before we can fully verify, yes, the offensive has started.
Richard, always a pleasure. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Richard Chmucka, military expert and senior fellow at the McDonald Laurier Institute. In a moment, I thought Jerry Agar in Toronto had an interesting segment, a 12-year-old involved in a stabbing. What is the involvement of the parent? Does it tick any boxes for Children's Aid to intervene? What happens there? We'll talk to lawyer Jeff Hirschberg about that next on the iHeart Talk Radio Network.